Welcome to the Commonweal Policy Podcast with me, Jonathan Chaffee. I'm the Campaigns Officer at Commonweal, and I am joined this week with Dr. Craig Diehl, who's the Head of Policy and Research at the think tank. Craig, welcome to the show once again.
Hello.
How have you been since we last spoke?
It's all going according to plan. No, we're just carrying on, keeping as best we can through this rather unique 2020. But yeah, I'm still here in my house, working from home, and keeping tabs on everything that's going on, juggling many different projects, speaking to many different people, learning from them, and we're constantly pushing forward with the Commonweal agenda and ideas.
And we are extremely busy. We have been this year. When you talk about the kind of madness of 2020, I mean, we have been extremely busy, and we've been working very hard on a range of policies, as listeners will know. And we wanted to talk this week about something of a success story, something that we feel has going to develop into something that's going to bring about a real change in the way politics happens in this country. And those who are avid listeners may recognise the last episode of the podcast. There was an issue which Craig was bursting to talk about, but which couldn't because it was still to be announced. But this is a major development around the Citizens' Assembly in Scotland, and we're going to talk about that today. But this is certainly something that has been greatly exciting for Craig for a whole number of reasons. But before we get into the detail of this issue, I'm going to ask you to just explain to listeners what a Citizens' Assembly is in the first place. And if I could ask you just to co-join your overview of that with the work that Commonweal itself has done on this issue, because that's going to be important framing for the discussion.
Yeah, so honestly, yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this. This is something that I say without hyperbole, this could be the biggest change Scotland could make to its democratic structure short of independence. And this has come out of Scotland's Citizens' Assembly. This was an organisation set up by the Scottish Government in late 2018, I believe. Late 2019, and it's been in progress through 2020. It's involved a group of citizens in Scotland coming together and discussing big ideas of national importance. And they're just in the process now of putting together their final report that will contain recommendations that go to the Scottish Government. And the one that we're going to be talking about today is, we've been told, is going to be included in that final report. So what is a Citizens' Assembly? It is quite a specific and distinct thing. It's distinct from a council of volunteer citizens or a focus group or something like this, because it involves a large number of citizens, a significant number of citizens, that have been selected randomly through a process of sortition. So it's a bit like a jury service. The people who have been involved were approached. They couldn't volunteer. They were approached by the organisers, asked if they wanted to come, and then the pool of people who accepted the invitation were filtered down so that the final group matched the demographics of Scotland. So they were balanced on gender, on age, on any other factors that they thought were important. Now, this doesn't need to be a national Citizens' Assembly. Citizens' Assemblies can be scaled to meet the challenges that they want to discuss. So this one is a national one. It covers all of Scotland, but you can also imagine a Citizens' Assembly advising a local authority council, in which case you would only ask people who lived in the local authority area, and you would balance based on the demographics of that area. You can also imagine a local Citizens' Assembly. So we've talked in the podcast before about our idea on development councils, a new layer of local government in Scotland that would be much more local than what we call a local authority. Our local authorities, if you put them anywhere else in Europe, they'd be called regional authorities. We are talking about what they call in Europe a municipal level council, so something covering the village that I live in rather than, say, all of South Lanarkshire. And you, again, a citizens' assembly could be set up to advise and to scrutinize that municipal council. And it would again only draw people from this municipality, and it would be balanced on the demographics of the municipality. So that's the thing that makes citizens' assemblies more distinct from other kind of focus groups or citizens' gatherings or conferences.
And that obviously is a democratic innovation at a time where democracy, as we've understood it, is in all kinds of decay, and not just here, but across Europe and transatlantically as well. So this innovation, this citizen assembly, has come up. The Citizens' Assembly in Scotland has come up with a range of measures, which you've started to outline there. But give people an impression of what this will mean practically, the suggestion of a Citizens' Assembly for the Scottish Parliament.
Yeah, so this is one of the ideas that they're going to come out with, and it's the one that we're excited about. This is what I'll call, just for clarity, a citizens' chamber. This is a body that would be drawn, again, using that sortition process, so it would be a citizens' assembly. But the chamber would be set up almost like the House of Lords for the UK level. It would fulfill that kind of function for the Scottish Parliament. To a degree, there's distinctions between the two. The purpose of the chamber would be to look at the legislation, the laws that the Parliament are making, and to scrutinise them. Is this law fit for purpose? Is it easily understandable? Is it appropriate? Is this the right time for this kind of legislation? And they could then produce their report on it and send it back down to the Parliament. I think the one that the Citizens' Assembly, the version that the Citizens' Assembly is proposing, would have a more of an advisory than a compulsory role to it. But it would hopefully be quite a powerful body that would be listened to. It would be very difficult for the Parliament to ignore the Citizens' Chamber if it came back and said, no, this legislation is inappropriate. Go back and think again. We currently do have some kind of scrutiny body within the Scottish Parliament, but it's via the committee system. So it's committees made up of the MSPs. So it's the MSPs scrutinising themselves, and it's okay. There are other countries that work in that system, but there have been issues in the past with, accusations that, especially in times of majority governments, that these committee systems, because they're balanced based on the makeup of the parliament. If you've got a majority government, then you end up with a majority control over the committees, and they can just railroad their agendas through. You can have issues with MSPs effectively scrutinizing themselves, so it might not be as accountable as possible. And also, scrutinizing takes up quite a lot of time. So MSPs, especially if they're ministers, trying to scrutinize the legislation while also forming it, while also doing their constituency work and other work that MSPs do, it can lead to quite a crammed workload. So there are arguments for that committee system, but there are arguments against it as well. And this new citizens' chamber would allow some of that work to, even if the committees continue, it would allow some of that work to come up and be scrutinized by the people, by the citizens of Scotland.
So that I mean that all sounds really clear, the way that you've given an overview of how this might work. I think one of the questions that people might have is, you talk about legislation, but this wouldn't presumably be for all legislation, would it? Or how would that be decided in your view?
It depends how you set it up. Again, these things are still open for discussion. So we actually produced a paper on this back in 2017, which laid out the foundations of how we thought a citizens' chamber could operate. And in that paper, we do advocate that the chamber would have a compulsory role. So it would be scrutinising everything that came up from the parliament, exactly the way the House of Lords does at a UK level. But I believe that the version that the Citizens Assembly, Scottish Citizens Assembly, has been playing with is one that has a little more choice and leeway over what it can do. So it would have the right to scrutinise all legislation, but it wouldn't have to. So it could effectively pick and choose. It could pull up the legislation that it wanted to look at, according to what the chamber itself thinks is important. So, I should also say that it's not just legislation. This chamber would also have the ability to scrutinize the MSPs and the government itself. So if the government was getting up to something that, wasn't considered acceptable, even if it wasn't to do with legislation directly, then the chamber would have the ability to launch an investigation or potentially even censure MSPs or the government for their actions if they went beyond a certain threshold of unacceptability.
well, one thing that I'm interested in, and I'd be fascinated by your kind of perspective on this, is that politics has been widely viewed as being captured by big corporate interests, by well-moneyed lobbyists who influence policy. And we've seen this writ large, haven't we, in the Westminster government in relation to privatization, in relation to even some of the big contracts given to companies throughout the pandemic. But we also see it in the Scottish context as well, where corporations and corporate lobbyists become intertwined with the policymaking process. Do you see the advent of a citizens' chamber as playing a role in addressing some of these issues?
Well, yes, because as soon as you give the citizens, a mass of citizens, a direct voice over Parliament, and with that chamber being effectively rotating on a regular basis, as citizens are rotated out and new citizens are selected to join, it becomes very difficult to capture any one individual. And because there are many of them, capturing one individual and corrupting them doesn't have that same effect. Because you have everybody around them as well. There's a sort of wisdom of the crowds effect. And it would actually, under this proposal, it would be very illegal to even try to do so. That analogy with jury service is very appropriate here. It is extremely illegal to try and influence a jury, for all those reasons. So if you apply the same principle to the citizens' chamber, you kind of mitigate that effect of trying to corrupt this chamber.
Now, I want to just bring us on to something else. It directly relates to this, but I think, when you've ever talked about a citizens' assembly, or in your words, a citizens' chamber, a lot of people can draw different ideas around what that actually means in practice. And for listeners who maybe aren't aware of the detail of how a citizens' assembly work, I think you've provided a very good overview at the start of this discussion. But do you think there should also be, coming alongside this, a wider educational move that will, as I say, make people aware of what a citizens' chamber is, how it operates and functions, how people can really understand how this kind of body would work? Because it seems to me that that's a very important part of the process, that this isn't just for those who end up being involved directly in the citizens' chamber, but there's a wider social and educational bit of work to be done around this as well.
There is, to the degree that this would be a new thing, if you imagine that when devolution happened and the Scottish Parliament was formed, there was a bit of an education campaign around what does this mean for Scotland? Who are your MSPs? How do you select them? What are they responsible for? And yes, there is still, even 20 years later, there are still people who don't know, which power is held at UK, Scottish, or council level, so that there's still a body of work on education that way. But in terms of actually taking part, then yes, if you get the letter through the door and you're selected to be on the citizens' chamber, I dare say there will be some form of training and induction on how you go about this. Again, in the same way that is for jury service, for anyone who's done that, there is a certain amount of introduction to the process, and there will be people on hand to guide you through any procedural stuff that has to go on. But we shouldn't fall into the trap of thinking that this is something that only the very well educated can do, because that can lead to a certain snobbishness about the process. And certainly, I've spoken to people who, when introduced to this idea, they immediately think of someone they absolutely would not trust to be on the chamber, because they don't think that that person is capable of doing it for whatever reason they think. And that's a very wrong-headed attitude to take to this. This should be something that is for and of everybody. This is something that anybody can take part in. Politics that closes itself off to anyone is inevitably doomed to failure. And we've seen that the negative results of that all over the place, especially in recent years.
And this isn't meant as a trick question or anything, Craig. Again, I'm just interested in your view. How do you feel that politicians might orientate on this? I mean, do you think this is something that will be widely welcomed among MSPs and among official politics, or do you think there'll be a degree of cynicism around it? Especially because, as we know. We know how power works. We know that, when people have been so used to a way of operating, especially MSPs and others, that do you think there'll be a degree of cynicism? Do you think that's something that will need to be tackled as often new democratic innovations do?
Something I'm very keen and very keen on saying when it comes to looking at political ideas is that everything in politics is deemed impossible until it becomes inevitable. So any new idea, I'm sure, will come up with some kind of opposition, especially from those who will see it as perhaps removing power from them. It will inevitably come up, but a lot of these arguments were actually leveled against the Scottish Citizens Assembly when it was formed. There was a lot of cynicism about what that would be about. Would this just be a board of a very narrow group of people who already agree with the government agenda and will be used to, again, railroad that agenda through? And it has turned out to be the exact opposite of it. This group has done a wonderful job, and they've come up with amazingly amazing ideas that a lot of politicians have scoffed at or simply just not thought of before. So I think this is a wonderful opportunity to do something that nowhere else in the world does like this, and really create a new kind of democracy.
That's interesting as well, isn't it? That when you talk about nowhere else in the world, this is an area where presumably Scotland can be pioneering. What impact do you think that has on Scottish politics generally? I mean, obviously this is a separate discussion from the question of independence, but do you see it as feeding into that feeling, that mood of change in Scotland, that mood for more democracy and for more control in the hands of ordinary people and the citizens of Scotland?
I mean, it must stand somewhat apart from the constitutional debate, because this is something that not only Scotland could do this now. There's no waiting for new powers to be delivered for it to happen. It's also something that we could do after independence. This is about the form and structure of our national government, regardless of what powers it does or does not control. But I think that more democracy is always a good thing. So giving people the ability to get involved in politics in this way and to hold their politicians to account is a beneficial thing, regardless of the constitutional direction of the country. It might, though, put some pressure on the UK government when people in Scotland are having these debates and having these discussions and holding their Scottish politicians to account. It might bring up that question of why can't we do the same with our UK politicians? Why can't other areas of the UK do have this same level of scrutiny over their own politicians in their local area? So if this is a good idea, which I think it is, and if it's implemented well, then I think it could spread.
So what happens next then? What's the process from here? How do you see this moving forward? Just so that listeners have a sort of clear idea of the kind of next steps here.
So I understand that the final report for the Citizens Assembly is due out early next month. It will then go to the Scottish Government, and they'll have their process of looking at the ideas that are in it. And we'll certainly report on that when the report comes out and pick out any other ideas that are relevant to our interests. But the Scottish Government will then respond to it and will be charged with implementing any of the ideas in there that they want to implement. But this is a body that was set up by the Scottish Government to come up with ideas that they couldn't think about. And they have really championed the Assembly's goals and its progress, and rightly so. It's been a wonderful piece of work. So I think it could be quite difficult for them to come round and look at the final report and say, yeah, we're just going to ignore everything you did.
So you feel confident then that this will actually happen on that basis? That's something that, it's a view which I broadly share, but again, we know how these things can go. So when you talk about Commonweal and the role that Commonweal's played, I just want to return to that as we come towards the end of the podcast. I want to return to the paper that you talked about in 2017, and just really to underline the impact and the influence that Commonweal can have on the political debate in Scotland, but also that you look at our policy library now, it's so expansive. We've talked about on this podcast a lot about how our policies interlock, about how one complements the other in terms of building up the kind of Scotland that we want to see. So I wonder if you could speak to that, just in terms of the paper that was produced in 17, the influence that Commonweal can have, the positive influence, and also just that sense of where you see a citizens' assembly or a citizens' chamber, as we're calling it, where do you see that fitting within the broader political landscape? I mean, how do you think this impacts other social questions like poverty or inequality, for example?
Well, on that, you can see the interlock that we've got with other papers that we've done on democratic structure. I mentioned the Development Council's idea, this local level of government that would have its own citizens' chamber scrutinising and directing that Development Council. So you can see how this idea of the people of that area having a direct scrutinizing role in a particular level of government, that's very scalable. So you can have it at national level, you can have it at local level, you can have it at regional level. If there's some project, I don't know, some big infrastructure project that straddles the boundary between two local authorities, maybe you bring up a citizens' assembly or a citizens' chamber covering both of those local authority areas to discuss the impact of that project. If you build this in as a core part of your democracy, then it's less about one particular body, but the principle of citizens and residents of the country having that oversight over their politicians rather than the other way around.
That's a really well put comment there, and I think that is an excellent conclusion to the discussion around the development of the Citizens' Assembly and from it the Citizens' Chamber, as Craig refers to it. There's lots to think about within this, and I'm sure it's a topic that we're going to return back to. As Craig points out, when the full report is published, we will be looking at other items that are suggested from the Citizens' Assembly. And as Craig said, a lot of work's gone into this. There's been a lot of very good ideas and a lot of grappling with process, which is all to the good, because whatever a Citizens' Assembly comes up with in the end, it has been the process of quite a lot of discussion, quite a lot of dialogue between people who have often got in the start, opposing views on some big issues and some big questions. But before we finish, Craig, I just wanted to draw you on to just another topic here, because I do think that it's important that when we do these podcasts, given the work that you have done on things like the traffic lights paper, which is a fantastic paper people should read and has, I think, influenced the debate in relation to tiers when it comes to dealing with the pandemic. I do think it's important that we do hear, as we progress through this crisis, just your kind of updated views on Where do you see the pandemic in Scotland? And I say that with reference to something that obviously a very negative development today, which is, I think today is the highest number of deaths we've seen in Scotland in a day. 69 people have lost their lives to the virus. And we know that progress is being made. We know that we are learning. There is talk of a vaccine and all that sort of thing, but there are clearly very serious issues that we have to continue to contend with. So, Craig, I wondered if just by way of bringing this discussion to a close, if you could give us your kind of latest insight into where you think we are with it all.
So it has been encouraging that a lot of the ideas that we talked about in that paper that were based on the best practice of countries that have been doing better during this pandemic than Scotland has. A lot of those recommendations have now been adopted by the Scottish government. We do have this tiered system. We do have a good system of understanding where those tiers apply and what applies in them. But there is still some way to go in really, if we want to treat this as aggressively as we have as other countries like New Zealand have, then we do need to think about things like how do we deal with people coming into Scotland, through our borders. So the way a lot of countries do this is, quite frankly, through quarantine hotels. So people coming into the country have to be diverted into a hotel, where they remain in isolation for a period of time until they prove to be not infected. There is still scope to do this in Scotland. The Scottish government certainly hasn't said they can't do this. They can't close the border per se because we don't have the powers over that. But there's nothing stopping us diverting people through testing centres and then into quarantine until they get the results. The objection that we had previously when we floated this idea was that in places like Australia, where these quarantine hotels exist, well, the virus still got out of them and caused an outbreak in places like Melbourne, to which I'd say, well, yes, it did. There were procedural failings, but that Melbourne outbreak has now been eliminated, and they're now looking at coming out of lockdown again. Whereas we are still there, we are still going through our second wave, and the tragic news today that we've seen the highest number of deaths in 24 hours than we have since the peak of the first wave back in March. And yes, there is hope in that infection rate does seem to be leveling off in Scotland, but there's also still fear that we could end up seeing areas like Lanarkshire, like possibly Inverclyde, going into full-blown lockdown again. So I think there's hope, but there's also a long, long way to go.
And just if I can just ask you finally, Craig, just because I know that people will be really interested in your view on this, do you have any comments on the development of this apparent vaccine and how you see that progressing?
Yeah, I mean that is some of the hope that we have seen. I mean, there's still, again, a long way to go, in terms of not just the development, but also the delivery of this vaccine. The company involved, Pfizer, says that they can have 1.3 billion doses ready by the end of next year, by the end of 2021. But that's you need two doses for this to be effective. So that's only 650 million people, across the world getting that could get vaccinated. Now, I don't think that that's going to be the only option. I think other vaccines will come online and be approved, and or other manufacturers will be able to take up this vaccine and manufacture it in greater numbers. There are logistic challenges around delivering the vaccine as well. It needs specialist equipment to store it and move it. So there's going to need to be a bit of planning about how that's done, and we have to remember that the rich Northern European and American countries aren't the only place out there. We are going to have a massive effort to get this vaccine delivered to the places in the other places in the world that really really do need this, where there maybe isn't the capability to get through this, even as Scotland and Europe have done. So there's challenges there, but again, there's hope we might see the end of this soon at some point.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because when you're just talking about Europe and elsewhere there, there's also other countries who have been far less economically advanced, who have for various reasons, as we've discussed on this podcast, managed to do better around the virus. And again, there's complex reasons for that, but I think what you're saying there is just so true, that this is a global threat that requires a global response. And in that vein, I'm sure we'll come to look at some of the work that Commio's done around things like a national pharmaceutical company. And I think we'll talk about how things like a vaccine could be produced and how it should be distributed in the way that's not just the most ethical, but the most efficient and beneficial for our society as a whole. So something to think about going forward, Craig. Your insights into the pandemic and your analysis of the Citizens Assembly and the new Scottish Citizens Chamber, which we hope to see become a reality, I think will be very interesting to people. And if they have been, if you enjoy this podcast and if you value the work that Commonweal produces and the way in which we attempt to influence the debate in Scotland, then please do, if you can, give us a donation, because rest assured, every penny that you do donate is put towards not just this podcast, but the whole range of activity that Commonweal is involved in. And with that, we'll be back next week.